Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the island change nation, in the sunny slave South Pacific that now has legalised gay marriage. The 13th, the luckiest country, the lucky country. And I wanted to talk about gay marriage as well. And here's the interesting thing about it. You can't even open up the debate without offending both sides. You notice that? If you say, I don't like gay marriage, then all of a sudden you're homophobic. If you're saying, I do like gay marriage, all of a sudden you're immoral. And you know, honestly, this is something that I don't know exactly where I stand on. This is something that I don't think actually frickin' matters. In the least. Somebody wants to get married, go and have married, you know? People used to do it back in the day all the time. You know, you find somebody who will marry you when you run away with a farmer's daughter, go right ahead. Why not if you marry with a farmer's son? I don't get it. And my friend Paul, he said gay marriage is a stupid thing. He's gay, and he says gay marriage is a stupid thing because he says something along the lines of you know, two men getting married seems like the craziest idea in the world because something along the lines of getting divorced and taking each other's money or something like that. You know, I thought it was quite funny. I can't remember exactly what he said, though. Probably just balls that one up. But, you know, I've talked to some people who are very, very anti-gay marriage. And they keep repeating themselves over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. It's wrong because it's unnatural. And a friend of mine, I think I might actually be able to give a demonstration for some of the YouTube listeners as well. A friend of mine was asked, you know, why do you disagree with homosexuality just in general? And he grabs a plug and he inserts the plug into it. And he says, that's why. Because there's a certain orifice that certain things are meant to be stuck into, and that's the end of the frickin' story. You know, and on a purely physical level, you know, he's right. However, on the other hand, homosexuality has existed for a long, long time. Apparently, Alexander the Great used to have boy lovers and what have you. So I honestly don't know. I don't understand the debate or the question fully, because I think in order to get the answers, you need to better understand the questions. Don't you think? There's a little bit of tentativeness, and I'm not very tentative at the best of times. You know, I normally just roll right in, guns blazing, chips fall where they may type of thing. But on this issue, it's very different for me because I'm unsure. Not because, and I'm not unsure because, oh, I worry about whether or not people will judge me on what I think or say, but because I don't know what I think or say about gay marriage. As far as I'm concerned, it's a misnomer. Doesn't matter. Does the structure and fabric of society change that people who were used to be illegal, like it used to be illegal in New Zealand to be gay? Right, you go to jail. You're a man who loves another man. Okay, you go to jail. And then they legalized that, and yet it was still illegal for them to get married because the church wanted to protect the sanctity of marriage while they raped small boys. So just think about that for a second. And again, there's other things of a scientific nature to bring into play here. Apparently, there was some experiments with bovine estrogen. They gave, I think, injections or something along those lines. I don't know how exactly they did it. They allegedly gave a whole bunch of bovine estrogen to bulls, And those bulls turned gay and started presenting themselves to other bulls. Say, whoa, there's something strange going on here. What's BPA? Bisphenyl alanine. It's in almost everything. Like, in all the major printer inks, in lots of the plastics that we drink out of, or if you happen to be eating your food with a spork that's made out of plastic with the bisphenol A in it. And then. So there's the other side of the debate, which is not talked about, I don't see, is how much chemical composition is responsible for some homosexuality. I had on, I think, Dr. Catherine Albrecht, don't quote me on that, and I asked her, what is the one thing that you generally do not talk about on your radio program to do with drugs, okay, you know, the pharmaceutical drugs that they prescribe for everybody for this, that, and the other. And she says, point blank, how it turns people gay. And I was like, whoa, whoa, what are you talking about? Somebody takes an SSRI drug and suddenly they become gay? She goes, well, yeah, it happens. In many cases of men who are happily married go on these drugs, and after about a month or so, they leave their wife and they run off with another man. And then at a later point, they go off the drugs and suddenly they're straight again. And they really regret, and it's destroyed their lives. So that's interesting too, isn't it? Because there's a debate about whether or not homosexuality is a natural phenomenon. And I'm not 100% convinced that it's entirely natural or entirely artificial. I think it's something in between. But I don't have the evidence. Here's the thing. Somebody could say homosexuality is natural and so on and so forth, but they don't have the blood tests with various levels of estrogen and so on and so forth. Like, how can you tell from a blood test whether or not somebody is gay? That would be something that would be of intense interest to me, because I'm interested in figuring stuff out. You know, it's not because I'm an anti-gay agenda or something like that. I've got gay friends. They can get married if they want to. Most of them don't want to because they think marriage will trap them. You know, it's freaking hilarious. And the other side of the coin is exactly what is the other agendas that are associated with this, because you talk about the breakdown of society. By the New World Order, they want to destroy the family unit. Now, if you're gay, can you have a family? No, you can't. All right? Physically, it's not possible. So then you have the other elements that are brought into the equation, surrogacy or adoption and things of that nature. And then people, again, come up with this moral question. Is it moral to allow gay people to have this, that, and the other? Well, I think, well, it depends on the individual. If that particular person is a total douchebag, and this is how I judge it as well. I don't judge you by your sexuality or what you do behind closed doors. That's your freaking business. If you are, on the other hand, an actual bad person who actually does damage to other people and or their private property, then I've got a problem with you. Beyond that, no, not really. It's your freedom. But, you know, this debate ignites a lot of people. And I can understand perhaps why they get all up in arms over it. You know, the gay community got practically militant over the issue. And we had gay politicians pushing this policy. And then at the result of poll testings, 80-odd% of New Zealanders said, no, we don't want to legalise gay marriage. Government passes it anyway. So then I start thinking, the government's under the control of the New World Order, directly under the control of the New World Order, and nothing would come through without their stamp on it and their say-so. So is there some kind of hidden agenda? I'm not saying there is. I'm not saying I wish there was. All I'm saying is every single time the government that's controlled by the New World Order passes a law, it's not a good law. There hasn't been a good law passed in 100 years. Goodness knows how much further back than that. Laws just seem to get worse and worse and worse. You know, back in the day, there was the Magna Carta of King John, guaranteed everybody their rights and liberties and private property and so on and so forth. That was the only law that you really needed. Even still through till this day, you don't really need any extra laws. And then people will argue and go, oh, well, it's a very different world today. It's like, no, it isn't. Not really. Human beings are still the same stupid, fracked up creatures that we always were, man. We're still trying to kill each other. We're still raping and pillaging and messing up the planet. What's so radically different? Right now we've got technology, you know, like somehow you've got a car and you've got to have specified laws for how much tread you can have on the tires and what its condition has to be in and what have you. See, I don't understand that either. Why exactly have we got so many rules here? Because, you know, it should be up to personal choice. Then again, you're putting people in danger, allegedly. Now, here's another thing. If something's putting people in danger, why do they make it illegal? All right, think about it. Is it illegal because it's dangerous, or is it dangerous because it's illegal? You know, like smoking weed, for example. Somebody is smoking a joint, cop comes up to them, busts them, puts them down on the ground, knee in their back, handcuffs on, cuts into their wrists, takes them into the police station, laughs at them, beats them up in the cells, takes their fingerprints, takes their DNA sample, throws them in the cells for a couple of hours, and then lets them out. And then he's got to go to court the next week or something or whatever. So he's got to tell his boss, look, I'm a criminal, I was caught smoking pot. And then you've got to go into court, and then you've got to hope that there's some kind of a judge there who will be slightly more lenient on you than perhaps another judge. Then you've got to pay some frickin' high fancy lawyer $1,700 for just turning up twice and just going, yep, we're pleading guilty. Okay? What caused more damage? If he'd just been left to smoke his joint, he would have gone home happy and probably had a nice sleep. Maybe a little bit of it with maybe a funky dream. See, again, this ignites the debate, as it were. Is there something wrong with gay marriage? We've already had civil unions. People didn't seem too up in arms at that. And yet I think it might be partly religious. Do you think? Because if you're thinking about this, right, really, really thinking about it, it's the sacred bond of man and woman that defines a marriage, isn't it? Right? Is that what we're being told? And what's the sacred bond between priest and choir boy got to do with that? So there's inherent hypocrisy. And I wonder if there's hypocrisy on both sides and whether or not there's any even point in the debate of gay marriage whatsoever. Who freaking cares? They can do what they want. I can get married to who I want. So can my missus. So can you. And yet somehow we need a law passed in order to give people this basic, simple, obvious freedom. You know, because they want some piece of paper that registers them as a married couple in the documents so that they can be registered with the government or something like that. That's what people want. I don't get it. And on the other hand, I heard that if you are married and you've got a registered marriage certificate and what have you, it gives the state custody of your children if they choose it. You know that? I don't know if that's true, but it sounds about right. Why would they get you to sign a document or something like that when you're just expressing your love for each other if there wasn't something in it for them? Maybe... the gay marriage thing actually works against homosexual people. Maybe it's an elaborate scheme by the government to steal all their resources and any children they may have fathered or mothered out of previous relationships or something of that nature. I don't know. But the point is, mate, There's been a huge debate over this. It has eclipsed everything except the Boston bombing, of course. I do consider that this is a difficult topic for some people. And I see people get angry over the very mention of any positive leanings towards gay marriage as well. It's really divided people, hasn't it? That's intensely interesting to me. And I want to know why. I want to know why, because I don't like having things that are out there that are in front of your face every day that I don't comprehend. I don't know why gay people are gay. I don't know why the government is passing the Gay Marriage Amendment Bill. I don't know why it was illegal to be gay in the first place, or why it was not lawful for gay people to be married. I don't know. And because I don't know, I can't form a really, really much of an opinion on it. And yet, most people have formed an opinion on it, despite the fact that they're in the same position of, I don't freaking know, as me. Am I the only one that sees something weird about this? That there's something else going on? That things perhaps need to be a bit more cleared up for people before they make decisions? You know? Maybe it's the correct decision. Maybe it's the wrong decision. Who freaking knows? Nobody knows. And nobody's even attempting to get into the debate, because everybody gets ticked off with you and starts yelling and screaming, you're a gay supporter, oh my God, or you're homophobic. And, you know, this reverts back to my old philosophy. If a debate has been raging for a long time and neither side has emerged as the clear and obvious winner based on evidence, it means both of them are probably wrong and don't know what they're talking about. So both the gay and the straight people have no idea what they're talking about. And yet we're all going to have to abide by the laws anyway. We'll be right back.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. 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 Congratulations. You made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
Yeah.
But I'm here now. So what you wanna do?
Huh?
How many dudes you really know can flow like this? Like this? Like this? Let's do it. How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this? Not many, if any, not many, if any. How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this? I don't know anybody.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Talking about the things that are really, really difficult to people to deal with. You know, talking about gay marriage and such. Moving on, because I think I kind of covered that, you know, that I don't really know what causes it, if there's a blood test or if it's a result of BPA, which mimics estrogen and the thing, you know, turning people gay, or SSRI drugs or whatever. Some people think it's natural. Other people have proof that there's some cases that are artificial, but they don't have proof that everything's artificial, you know. I don't know. It's a real difficult one. Anyway, I wish I could take callers today, but we've had some problems with the phones, and I wish I could have guests today, but I had problems with them too. So it's just me. And also, here's the other element to understand here. Freedom, just general freedom. Do you think that you should have the government debate and decide whether or not you can express your love to somebody else in a legally documented form? I don't think the government has that right. So therefore, gay marriage is wrong. Right? Just purely because of the fact that they should be able to get married anyway without the government say-so, regardless. Okay? If a law is unjust, then it's your job to resist that law. And many people who were gay previous to homosexuality being made illegal, were still doing it anyway, weren't they? As if they were just doing it behind closed doors. And that's what happens. And you know, good on them. If you feel a certain way and you do a certain thing, you ain't hurting anybody and people are entering into it consensually, what's the problem? You know, what's the problem here? I don't get it. Nobody's ever tried to force me to marry somebody that I didn't want to marry. I wasn't born in some kind of arranged marriage situation like in the Indian caste system. You know, it's a weird one. It's a weird one. Now, I don't know. I don't actually even know what to talk about today. You know, I'm just so frustrated with the general situation of my country at the very least. You know, I mean, dig this. Our Prime Minister, John Key, used to work for the Federal Reserve Bank for 2 years as the head of European bond and derivatives trading. He was the Merrill Lynch representative. And then he comes back to New Zealand after goodness knows how many years abroad. So we don't even know what the hell the country's been like all these times that he's been away in Ireland and Europe and New York and stuff, doing financial trading and speculating on the New Zealand currency. And he comes back and he's worth 50 mil. And in fact, this is what I was wondering yesterday. Is he the wealthiest prime minister this country has ever had? Is he? Because when he came back out in Helensville, which is, about 20 minutes drive from where I am, I drove past his electoral office a couple of weeks ago. And I was just thinking, what the hell, man? The guy's been out of the country for practically his entire freaking life, his entire professional career. And he comes back out of nowhere worth 50 million bucks, and all of a sudden he wins an electoral seat in a place where he hasn't lived at all and probably doesn't even really do shockingly really anything for any of those people. I mean, what is going on here? It's insane. It is really, really insane. Beyond a joke, and somebody can do this. And yet that's what happens. Apparently there was some other National Party MP for which that was their electoral seat, for which they were trying to represent their people and what have you. And then this rich boy comes in from frickin' nowhere and just takes it and becomes the Prime Minister all of a sudden. You know? He was just like, he was nowhere. He was nowhere, and then all of a sudden he was the Prime Minister. He wasn't even in the party. Isn't that unbelievable? How much money does it take to become an effective prime minister? Should you have been a poor person or whatever? I mean, because obviously, if you're a broke ass person, becoming the prime minister would be a great hefty challenge, because all of the other people that you've got in your social circles are probably likely to be just as broke as you, just as politically apathetic, and incapable of supporting you anyway. And whereas if you're incredibly wealthy, people somehow look up to you and go, oh, well, you're a very wealthy person. You must be very successful. Therefore, you're going to be able to save our economy by getting it into massive quantities of debt. And sure enough, that's what happened. He comes in, 2008 financial crisis. Everybody's losing their jobs. 19 finance companies collapse inside of like 6 or 18 months together or something like that. Something ridiculous. And then he comes in, bails out all the banks, doesn't ask for a single share in them, starts passing legislation like nobody's business. Apparently, like something along the lines of 2 laws per day on average are being passed by this government. Massive terrorism suppression, huge, huge, massive debt they're getting the country into. We've reached a debt ceiling. Our currency's been devalued, and people think he saved the economy. People are freaking retarded. Freaking retarded. Come on. Where's the reality? Can you not see it? You know why? Because all the people who freaking vote for any one of the two major parties, I'll probably offend a whole raft of political idiots out there, but I don't care, because it's the truth. If you're voting for any one of the two major parties in any country, they will frack you over big time. If you're supporting the lesser of two evils, you know? Hey, I can't complain, because I voted. Yes, I voted. I voted for the man I despised, and I'll wind up getting what I deserve. It's about right, isn't it? If the degree of political apathy in all of our nations accumulates into this, that you will elect somebody who you don't know, who you've never looked into their past, who does virtually the opposite of every single thing they said they would do, and yet you still believe every single thing they say, you are the person who's determining which direction your country is going, and you continue to support the country going down. Okay? Oh, my giddy godfathers. It's ridiculous. Totally out of the loop. And, of course, the media doesn't help, because they're not the ones informing people about these kind of things. I mean, occasionally they'll come out with a piece on John Key saying, you know, he said this, but he actually did this, you know, one or two times when he's done it over a million times. Well, not a million. Maybe that's a bit of a hyperbole. Maybe at least hundreds of lies. Maybe thousands. There's more lies coming out every single day. And I can guarantee you, it's the same thing with Obama. Same thing with whatever other leader you can really conceivably think of in the Western world, isn't it? They're all lying scumbags. That's practically a requirement of the job. Hey, you got to lead a whole bunch of diverse people and frack their country up. And you think that they're going to employ honest people to do this? You're going to be freaking yeah. I mean, come on. Anybody who's been in charge of a group of diverse people knows that it's a hell of a lot easier to tell everybody a big lie that they'll all support than it is to tell them all the truth that they'll all support. People don't support the truth. You know, truth is dangerous. Truth is difficult. Truth is powerful. And if you're speaking truth to power, you ain't going to get elected. You know, the system's just not set up that way. Vast majority of people are literally too misinformed and or too stupid and or too apathetic to really know what the heck is going on, who they should in fact be voting for, or whether or not you should be voting at all. Under New Zealand electoral law, if you are registered to vote and you're required to by law, otherwise you get a fine or something like that, and you don't vote, then your vote gets given to the winners by proxy anyway. Okay? So you're legally obliged, not lawfully, mind you, but legally obliged to take part in the political process, even though the very fact that you are participating in the political process is the very thing that is ensuring scumbags get elected and hence destroy your country. Isn't that really horrific? I can't believe it. And you know, you have a look at people, and they're still debating over it, you know. Oh, yeah. And what's the asset sales thing going on right now in New Zealand, where they're trying to flog off our power companies to New Zealanders? We already own it, okay? And what's interesting is that there's demonization afoot as well. So here's the two main parties, basically, the centre-left and the centre-right, which are both basically in the centre, and there's not really a hell of a lot of difference in between them. They pretend like there is, but there frickin' isn't. They'll both frack up the country by any means necessary. And all they do is promise people things that they think won't frack up the country, but will anyway. I mean, come on. The National Party comes out and says, okay, we're in massive debt that we got ourselves into, that we, the party, actually got ourselves into, and we did it deliberately. And we gave away huge quantities of money to finance companies, which collapsed, insurance companies, which we didn't ask for a share in, and then we give contracts for, the Christchurch rebuild, for example, and appoint Jerry Brownlee, Mr. Earthquake Minister himself. The guy's so freaking gargantuan in his flabby stature, he could probably cause an earthquake if he really tried hard, you know, comes in. And now everybody in Christchurch is complaining about a lack of democracy. They're not even allowed to have political rallies in the centre of the city anymore due to this earthquake recovery minister guy. Okay? It doesn't matter what they do. They always mess you around. They always frack up the country. Always. For it to not be so is simply in break with tradition. Right? I remember Bill Hicks was talking about the election of Clinton and how he was great. Finally, this Republican beast elephant has been slain And I feel like me and every artist in the freaking country are like little pygmy tribes shooting darts at that elephant, you know? And now it's like, and then we're like running around doing a little pygmy dance. And yet, Clinton goes on to start illegal wars in Kosovo, repealing Glass-Steagall, which allowed massive derivatives trading to go forth, which wound up in 2008 with the culmination of the global economic credit crunch slash crisis slash whatever the hell else you want to call it. Okay? Even Bill Hicks was taken in by the Democrats at the time. And I'm sure if he'd lived to this day, he'd started to figure out that it's all complete BS and that he really hates him, that all the hypocrisy just continues and continues and continues. What's it all leading to? You know, many people don't even ask. Many people just don't freaking care. It's a sad, sad situation. I actually feel pain in my heart, like I've got some kind of a coronary episode coming on when I think about just how easy it is to manipulate people. You wear a nice suit and tie and you speak in a certain way and you dodge every damaging question with demonizing the other party, then people will eat out of the palm of your hand. If I were to run to politics, and I'm never going to, Jesus, never. Unbelievable. It's like, why? What is the point? First of all, I won't win. Second of all, half the crowd, if not most of the crowd, in any political debate, which only a very, very minimal amount of people even go to, because people are just that politically apathetic these days anyway, most of them would just laugh at me from all the things that I say. And I had this idea, you know, I could run as a New World Order Party or something of that nature. We had a New World Order Party before in New Zealand, you know, like these two guys who were like going out into the streets trying to get 10-cent donations from people. It's just like unbelievably foolish. Really? And they say, we are the New World Order Party. We want a one-world government and a one-world currency. And I'm not kidding. This actually happened in the 2008 elections. I was there to cover it. They never turned up to any political debates. And essentially, they just created a little bit of a media buzz around themselves. And surprise, surprise, nobody voted for a New World Order. And I don't know who those guys are or what their motivation was. They certainly weren't part of the New World Order. Maybe they were just a couple of truthers who decided to start a political party based upon the New World Order principles to wake people up to the fact that there is a New World Order coming. You know, if so, good on you guys. Didn't win, even though you're preaching the same globalist policy that essentially all the other people are doing. And you know why? Because you weren't a frickin' scumbag with $50 million in your back pocket. Or wearing suits and ties and allowing people to be convinced of your lies and deception and scumbaggery while you go out and destroy the country. They are openly coming out and saying we're going to secede sovereignty and everything. No. You got to do that covertly if you want to win. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment for the show today. Man, this really is the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, even when it's just me ranting. God, I understand the frustration that people feel. Yeah, I feel it too. You just kind of think about the scumbaggery and the New World Order, and you start ranting and you go off on tangents, and you forget to take callers and you apologize for ranting. It's just, come on. I think we're all just dealing with it with a lot of frustration here, you know? Do you agree that life is pretty frustrating, particularly once you know that most of it's a freaking lie that you've had to support your entire life? You know, I remember when I was a young kid of, like, I don't know, 18, I think. Yeah, it was like 10 years ago. I voted for the Green Party, you know, and what was his name? Nandor Tanchos, who we've had on the show, New Zealand's first Rastafarian parliamentarian. And I voted for him and the Green Party. And then I later on found out, through a little bit more awareness, that the Green Party was, well, basically edging him out as well. That he was implementing, or at least attempting to implement, policy that might have been good for people, like the clean slate scheme. If you get a conviction in New Zealand and it's a non-jailable offence, like if you get convicted and you don't get sent to jail within 7 years, you get your slate wiped clean, right? And your record is expunged, provided you don't commit any more crimes and get convicted of them. And it turns out that he was under surveillance by the State Intelligence Services of New Zealand, SIS, you know, the equivalent of NSA or CIA. And it turns out again that the Queen, that's right, the Queen Elizabeth has draconian power over the New Zealand Parliament, and that all of the parliamentarians are under surveillance. So in case they start doing things that the Queen doesn't like, she will get reports back and get that person removed. And that's not what happened to Nandor Tanchos. Sure, he was surveilled, and sure, there was a big hurrah in the media about it, but he didn't get kicked out of Parliament. He left. And I will never forget his final address to Parliament, how before coming into politics, he had never had a watch, never had a timepiece, no need for it. He'd just be places at certain times and do job and work and that kind of thing, you know, as he do. And then, all of a sudden, he had to be in the chamber at a certain time, at a meeting at a certain time, at this, that, and the other at a certain time. And he hated it, absolutely hated it. This is part of what his speech was about. And he pulls a ball peen hammer out of his inside jacket pocket, places his wristwatch on the bench, and smashes it in front of Parliament. That was freaking awesome. You know? Don't you wish that every politician was like that? An activist. Somebody who doesn't like all these rules, regulations, bureaucracies. And really, professionalism. I don't like professionalism, namely because it makes everything colder, more rigid. In some cases, it works really well to be professional about stuff and get things done. But the thing is, you don't have to be very professional in order to get things done. If you've got passion instead of professionalism, you'll actually accomplish a heck of a lot more, I think. And if we have a constant stream of politician scumbags, which we do, that are always vying for control of the country, What does that really mean for the average person? Does that mean that, oh, I'm not a lying, cheating, sociopathic, rigid, unwavering, unpassionate, disenchanted piece of trash? Therefore, I can't help the country much. You know, unbeknownst to us, it's actually the people who are there to try and solve all these problems that I believe are really the cause of all these problems. Think about this mentality. I'm a frickin' scumbag. I'm a liar. I'm a sociopath. I'm a child rapist. I'm a political well-wisher to New World Order scumbaggery. And I love tyranny. And I love manipulating people. I joke and laugh behind the people's back while I stab them in it. That's the kind of mentality that I'm talking about here. Frickin' scumbags. This makes me so sick and so ill. And I don't think hate is too strong a word. I'm not hating any of these individuals in particular. I mean, I may go on about John Key or whatever, but he's just a puppet, you know, just like all the rest of them. And I've spoken to these people, and they're cold. They're horrifying specters to behold, like a frozen shade of darkness washed over them with their dead eyes and their very nice cufflinks. Who do these people think they are? I think they're better than me. I think they're better than you. They think that us, the conspiracy theorists, are insane. That we see through their lies. We see through the illusion that they project for us. And that is what makes us crazy. Because we're not sane enough to believe BS when there is contrary evidence ad infinitum, debunking it, all of it. Every single policy that I've ever seen implemented by this government has fracked people over, something chronic. And only very few times have they tried to introduce something that's a little too draconian for people to accept of the possibility, and now people are rising up against it. Like the vitamin suppression bill, whatever it was called. My friend Nicola Grace from Health Freedom New Zealand, top lady, organized and defeated a bill in Parliament that would, had it been passed, given the regulation of all vitamins and supplements to an Australian authority, which bans vitamins and supplements and minerals and stuff like that. It's all Codex Alimentarius. And Nicola knew tons about Codex Alimentarius. And she started to see it being implemented here, so she organized a movement to dislodge that trash. And here they are again. All right, the similar legislation is coming back. And I don't know if Nicola's heard about this. She's in Australia at the moment. I should probably give her a call and find out. But apparently they're going to try and pass it again. And what occurs to me is that, man, there really ain't anybody to step up and replace the skill, the discipline, and the dedication of somebody like Nicola Grace from Health Freedom New Zealand. I don't see anybody else with that kind of drive that she has, with the ability to speak. She's so well versed. Her practice and her speaking is great. You know, she'd make a great real politician. But because the political spectrum is corrupted and full of scumbags, she'd never win. You understand? So you have to make some kind of effect from the outside, if it's at all possible. And that's kind of the reason why I do this radio show, is people like Nicola really do need more coverage than they're currently getting. Because these issues that affect everybody in the country, and if it gets passed here, guaranteed, it'll be used as a precedent by other governments around the world to pass even similar draconian legislation in line with Agenda 21 and Codex Alimentarius, and name your conspiracy frickin' folder document here. We are all in this together in a non-collectivist way. We're all in a prison. A big, psychological, mind-controlling, horrifically torturous Abu Ghraib prison that we call a free society. A free society that feels free to take away our rights, to take away our wealth, to take away our children, to take away our resources, to take away our very morality and what it is to be human, and to censor and squeeze out those voices that rail and resist against it. Not on my watch. Hopefully not on yours, ladies and gentlemen. You've been listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Thank you very much for doing so. And if you are capable of supporting me financially to get me back above water, please, please go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and subscribe for as little as a dollar a month. We'll make a one-off donation and we'll give you some of those commercial-free archives as well. Thank you so much for your support, ladies and gentlemen. I actually broke down in tears last night when one of my listeners gave me $100. Allows me to pay the rent this week. Thank you. We'll see you again.